Hey, welcome to Talking Tunes. I'm Britt, and I'm here with Tim. Tim, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How's it going?
It's all going okay. So this week we're talking about debuts, our top three debuts that we've had for as long as we could probably remember. So, Tim, what does a debut mean to you? What is a good debut?
A good debut to me, like any album, has a re-listenability to it, if that is a word.
For me, it is, yes.
Yeah. It's an album that makes me keep coming back, a reason why I fell in love with a particular artist, or just an album that just hits all the right spots. Not every debut album is a successful album. Not every debut is a favorite album. I mean, one of my favorite artists of all time, Jimmy Buffett, his debut album was a clunker, and I'll be the first to admit it. And so will other parrot heads. Not every one of them is going to be a home run off the bat. And my criteria with picking the three albums that I chose today, they were all home runs right off the bat. And we can get into that a little bit. But to me, that's what makes up a good debut album.
I concur in some aspects. To me, it's a combination of a lot of factors. Definitely something that you can go back to, and it reminds you either of the time that you heard it, or it just it's something that is so ubiquitous in your life that you're going, yeah, this, you can't deny the fact that it is great song craft involved with it. It stokes very, you know, as with any music, it's supposed to derive emotions from you. So whether it's, you know, satisfaction or, you know, joy or whatever the case may be, it's an album that has a connection with you. And I think most of the ones that I think we're going to talk about this go around, they're going to have those type of feelings with everyone. I can't imagine people listening to this and seeing, well, I don't see where you're going with it. I think we've definitely discovered some very strong candidates for top debuts. So, Tim, why don't you tell us what your number three is?
Number three for me, I'm going to go, hold on a sec before we do that. I want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
Because I want to, shit. I completely screwed this whole thing up.
Again, this is a work in progress. No, there are no bad choices here.
Yeah. Before I go into my top three, I just wanted to make a couple things clear.
Okay.
You
are like setting ground rules?
I'm setting a little bit of ground rules here.
Okay.
When looking for the top three or any debut album, my criteria was kind of specific.
Okay.
They needed to be somebody that has not been heard of on the major scene before.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did. So, you and I talked about that. We definitely said that, hey, they have to come in sight unseen, basically. Yeah. They exploded so into it.
All the Beatles solo albums that came out after that, which is another topic for another day. Which we will be getting into.
Sometime. Yes.
But these are just bands that came out of left field of the mainstream and made a big impact, not only on us, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely on music as a culture.
Yeah.
But without further ado, my third favorite debut album, and again, keep in mind, this isn't a definitive list. We're not experts. This isn't the end-all, be-all list. This is just...
For us, it is.
For us. For us, it's our favorite albums.
Yes, yeah.
But my debut album was released 30 years ago from a band called Weezer. It was a Blue album released May of 1994. It was produced by Rick Ocasek. Remember that name. It might come up a little bit later. And includes singles Undone the Sweater Song, Buddy Holly, and Say It Ain't So. This album is one that I go back to quite often. It's just a fantastic album from front to back, up and down, east, west, whatever you want to call it. There's not a skippable track, in my opinion, off of this album. It's just a great listen to from start to finish.
I agree. It is a solid debut. I remember hearing this way back when it first came out. And when you heard, iconic with the video incorporating Happy Days in mm-hmm. their Buddy Holly song, which yeah. again, you would think they were disparate, but to have, you know, have them try to embrace the fact that they were calling back, because their sound is very much an amalgam of a pop. I would say it's almost pop, not pop rock, but, you know, just power pop type sound with a little bit of alternative with it. So it was, yeah. And it was, at the time, was you said 94. It yep. it was right after we had the big Nirvana grunge scene. So it was almost a refreshing sound to hear at the time, where it wasn't so clothed in the angst that was grunge. But it's a great album. It's a great choice at number three. I mean, makes yeah. me wonder what number 201 are going to be. So,
well, this one, you know, I remember this a little bit differently than you. In 94, I was 8 years old.
Oh.
And so all of the albums on my list were either well before my time, or with this one, I wasn't really quite old enough to listen to it just yet. And even growing up, my musical tastes were more of the, quote, classic rock genre. And I actually didn't get into Weezer until my mid to late 20s, which was about 10 years ago. And when I found this record, it was like discovering brand new music all over again. And I just really, absolutely, not just the singles that are on this song, some of the other track listings that are off of it that aren't big hits, but Weezer fans and people who like the album know the songs. There's just not a clunker on this album, I think. And even when you look at some of the stats on like Spotify or YouTube Music or wherever you stream your music, this album has every single one of these track listings more than 1 million streams. So that stands the test of time for an album, I think. And it's just a fantastic album, and one that I will always forever go to when I'm in the mood for a little Weezer.
I mean, at least the top three that you mentioned were in constant radio play in alternative rock when they were out. Cause I remember hearing them all the time. I know, I totally appreciate Weezer in that configuration. That whole album like you said, there's not a skippable song within that album. It is a front to back, left to right. Just you put it on, and as Ron Popeil used to say, set it and forget it, because that's what it would be. And it is, I mean, for 41 minutes, it's a great album. And with having Rick Ocasek, who, as you alluded to, has been known to be part of those type of classic debuts, he was the right person behind the boards for that one. That was it's a great album.
I had the pleasure a couple of years ago of seeing them with the Hell Omega tour with Green Day and Fall Out Boy.
Ah.
And unfortunately, Fall Out Boy had gotten COVID through the band when they came through New York. So it was pretty much just Weezer and Green Day. And Weezer played most of this album, including some of the, quote, lesser known tracks. And it was fantastic. And if you have a chance to see Weezer, I would say definitely go do that.
I would recommend it all. I did see them also in concert, but they were on the beach. To say that it was problematic when Rivers decided to go on the dunes, which is illegal in my area of the country. He actually had to pay a fine to when he did that, but it was a great show. I highly recommend seeing Weezer in concert if you get a chance to, for sure. So, I guess that leaves it to my third one. Is that correct?
What about your number three?
And my number three, Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. Yes, that is the easy choice, and I'm sorry to say, but that was easy for me as well. It came out in July 21st, 1987. At the time, I was in my freshman year of college when that first came out. So I was very aware as part of the they were kind of the first band that kind of took a different path than the traditional hair metal bands that were. So I listened to that album, I think, nonstop from 87 till probably 89, maybe 90, if you get my drift there. So they had four consecutive weeks at number one from at the top 200 album charts. I think they are now 18 times platinum, probably even more than that. They've been listed very highly on all the rankings as far as top albums. They had five singles, which I do not remember all five singles. I do remember, obviously, Welcome to the Jungle, Sweet Child of Mine, Paradise City. I don't remember It's So Easy, Mr. Brownstone, and Night Train being part of the singles, but hey, that, I mean, at that point, they were ubiquitous within the collective conscience that we had at the time. I did get to see them during the infamous Metallica Guns N' Roses tour in 1990, I think it was, when they were, that was the tour that basically James Hetfield burned his arms for pyros. Mm. But I saw them at the opener in RFK Stadium. But they are, I mean, you can't have a top three debut list and not have Guns N' Roses, who I think is the number one debut of all time. It is a front to back, I mean, now it's considered classic rock, but it is a front to back, great listen. It's not, it is something that, I mean, I think nowadays people know, and it's more considered classic rock, but it's really an album that if you want that type of reminder of what the late 80s, early 90s prior to grunge came about, that is the album that you pull. And it is something that I think they still tour on. I don't think it'll ever go away. I don't think it's something that will ever be replaced as the top debut, as we've gone into a fractionalization of the collective pop culture consciousness. But I still think it is worth mentioning on this podcast.
This album, to like many, many, many people, holds a special place for me as well. And I hesitated leaving this and one other album off of my list, which I can talk about later. I remember when I first, I bought my first guitar at 14. I was working at a golf course, picking the range, and saved enough money to buy myself an Ibanez. And at the time, I was really listening to this album, Zeppelin II, and 1984 from Van Halen. So those three albums really culminated into my obsession with rock and roll. I'll be damned if I didn't try to play every single song off of this album on my guitar. Very difficult, slash is a wizard, you know, on the guitar. But this album is so good from front to back. And it's just, it's a fantastic album that should be on anybody's list of any type of favorite album ever.
Yeah. It is, I mean, especially for someone, obviously we're in this, you know, different age ranges, for some, for an album to, you know, go from my generation to your generation and not lose any significance to it is unbelievable. I mean, we're now in an age where we're seeing all these older acts still transition all the way up to Gen Alpha. Again, I'm showing my age, but still, it is showing how much the, just how creative and how just capturing this type of music, these type of artists are for everyone that have gone on, has proceeded or after they've debuted. I mean, you think of even more recently, you can't think of a band that has grabbed that much attention over the time frame. And again, I might be myopic in my opinion of it, but you don't hear people or any albums that have really everyone has gravitated towards. it's just not that way anymore. So to, for this in 87 to still speak to people 20, 30 years down the road, it is crazy for me to feel that that still has that type of pull. So yeah,
you still see people who are part of your age group and my age group that are now having kids or have kids already. And even these kids are wearing, you know, the Appetite for Destruction logo on a t-shirt, and it still carries weight, you know, 30 plus years later.
Well,
it's, I mean, to be fair, all these albums, I think, will carry their weight through time. But
you're getting to my opinions of bands becoming clothing wear, but that's another topic for another time. Tim, what is your second debut?
My second album was released in 1978. Remember the name I mentioned before?
Michael
Kasich?
Yes.
My next album is The Cars, from The Cars. And this album is... it became a very big influence on me after my obsession with hard rock, and I kind of went into this new wave vibe with my musical learning. I wanted to broaden myself more as a guitarist, and I, the way I, like everybody else, was to try new things. And in trying new things, my mom had The Cars' Greatest Hit CD. And most of this album is on that CD. And when I first saw the different album covers all those years ago, I thought they were the same Greatest Hit albums. But this album just slaps, as they say now, from beginning to end. I mean, you open up with Good Times Roll, My Best Friend's Girl, Just What I Needed. And you got Your All I've Got Tonight, Bye Bye Love, Moving in Stereo. I mean, just every single one of these songs have had radio airplay over the years. And musically, another band that has inspired so many other acts to come before it, or to come after it, rather. And it, to me, this album is just one that is always in my top five rotation. I listen to this album 2-3 times a week sometimes. It's fantastic to just listen to front to back.
I mean, I can't agree with you more. It sounds like we might have colliding influences here. This is a great album, like you said, for to have this be a debut, and the first three songs are just clear cut, just I don't think people would not argue the fact that those three are still played, always. I mean, they're
still hear them on the radio today.
You still would hear them on the radio. They are at the time. They would be considered new wave. I don't consider it new wave, but I'd still hear a lot of, more of the power pop, Beach Boys influence to them. I mean, I remember when my favorite album by them. Well, it's not The Cars. It is their third album, I think it is. It's Heartbeat City. Is that the third or fourth? Yep. I think that's third. That was the one that came out in 84, produced by a guy that maybe some people have heard, Mutt Lange, who produced a lot of Def Leppard stuff. But that was my favorite album by them. And I remember I played that one back and forth, all the time. But still, the first album has that same sound. I mean, Mutt Lange didn't change anything. They just refined it as they got throughout the years. But like you said, they're just the first three hot songs are just slap. They are, you can't have a Cars discussion without having their debut album part of it. It is not a throwaway album. It is a solid, consistent album that tells you exactly who they are. You have Rick Ocasek at the front, but then you have Benjamin Orr come in and they'll give him a bone and they'll say, okay, Ben, here, have a song, have two songs, whatever the case may be. The bassist, but his voice is so different. To compare the two is not the same, because you really have Rick, who's, very much, his voice is very, I wouldn't say monotone, but it's not. I mean, you're not gonna write home about Rick Ocasek's voice. That's, it's not his voice. It's his music and stuff. Whereas Benjamin Orr's voice is unbelievable in comparison. You would think he should have been the lead singer the entire time.
Just listen to Drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Drive off of Heartbreak City. So, mm-hmm. I mean, or Heartbeat City. But still, it's the Cars' first album. It sets a stage for their entire run throughout all the way until they, I think, obviously they broke up like right after 87. Because, of course, that's when I saw them on tour with Ice House, of all bands, their door-to-door tour. And then they came back, and then Benjamin Orr passed away. But still, it was their great American band. Yeah. And
their second album, too, was no slouch either.
Oh, no. They hit right as I think the change to new wave was. Right as we were going out of punk, they were coming out and being really like, okay, we're going to lean into the keyboards. We're going to actually make it sound different than what we were seeing in punk. And I think I still think they're underrated.
Yep.
Shockingly, but I still think they're underrated.
Yeah. I mean, this band doesn't get the Main Street credit it deserves. Like, if you listen to rock radio, they'll give the Cars the praise that they need and they deserve. But this album just...
Yeah.
Easily, not only one of the best AP albums, but easily one of the greatest albums of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
If you haven't listened to it all the way through and you're out there listening to us blabble on about it, give it a listen. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, their deep tracks are the ones that you would think, why didn't they put these as singles? It really was. They had a glut of songwriting power behind them. It's shocking, really, to feel that they are still not totally appreciated. I don't know if they ever made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or not. I think they did get inducted in 2018, which is way too long. Yeah. But then that's another discussion for another time as far as the politicalness of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a bit of a joke.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, yes. Definitely something that is more political and probably similar to the Stars on Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yeah. I'm sure you have to pay your way to get in there, but that's that's my characteristic of what you have to do to get in there. So my number two is one that came out on February 2nd, 1989. And as of last year, finally was able to be streamed. It was 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul. Mm. Now, if you're not familiar with De La Soul, they are part of the, I would say at the time, they were not the antithesis of a gangster rap, but they came out more as just like, hey, this is, you know, this is who we are. We're part of the New York crew. We're not so much into saying how, you know, we're not like the old school hip hop, which is more into, you know, saying how big we are and how bad we are. Sorry, LL. But we were not coming out as in LA, which was more about the, you know, thug, you know, gangster and this, you know, stuff like that. They are more or less just, this is who we are. This is the samples we like. And they were, I mean, everyone knows Me, Myself, and I, which of course sampled a lot of stuff that they couldn't get released. But they were part of the Native Tongues. And the Native Tongues was a collective that included them. They included A Tribe Called Quest. They had Queen Latifah, Moni Love, Jungle Brothers. They also had Black Sheep. They were a collective as far as a group of people that had the same commonality as far as like more Afrocentric hip hop. And it was their debut, came out of nowhere, but just totally changed how people would listen to hip hop at the time. Cause I was, you know, I like Public Enemy. I like LL Cool J. you know, all these guys that run DMC that were more aggressive. And these guys were not so much aggressive. They were just kind of just like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. We sample stuff from all the way back, you know, do some funk, some soul stuff, but also pull out some other stuff like doo-wop and psychedelic and, you know, other stuff like that, where it's like there, it was just a different trip as it was. And at the time when I heard them, I was totally blown back because I was big, prior to them coming out, I was big into Public Enemy, and to hear them spin how they were and how their life experiences were totally took me back. So, oh, okay, there are different perspectives and how rap is supposed to be presented. So it was just a really, for me, it was just a, just unbelievable album and just really helped me, I guess, grow as far as what I considered hip hop to be, to what this album did. It totally blew open what the shackles of what, rap and hip hop was at that time.
I will believe you. I have not given this one a listen to. I've heard of it. I obviously know who De La Soul are, but I'm looking at the track listings now, and I know one or two of the songs off of this album, but other than that,
yeah, a lot of it, like Potholes in My Lawn. I mean, just great. Say No Go has a killer sample of Hall & Oates, Say No Go.
I see that. But actually, when I first saw that track listing, my thought process was, what's the song? I Can't Go For That, No Can Do, I believe.
That's exactly what, that's what it is. And that was off of their, I think, Private Eyes album. So, but I mean, they pulled anything that they could. Another
band that we'll be talking about at some point in the show.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is their, you know, they took whatever they wanted. And I think that was part of that collective where similar to, I mean, I would have put Tribe on here, but I thought this was more impactful because it definitely got the zenith of their movement as far as the Native Tongues and how they looked at what, how to create a beat and how to create, you know, how to sample. To where you would see it in, like, say, I mean, I wouldn't say Beastie Boys songs, but they did that later. But you saw other areas where they would take beats that were non-traditional, you know, not James Brown or something like that, but they would take other areas and put those beats and put those samples into their music. So, I mean, it's really, I thought, was a landmark album. And it's one I still listen to. And I still own it. And thankfully for the younger kids out there, it's available for streaming. It had been a long time because it was not available due to Tommy Boy and their inability to clear samples to allow it to stream. And back in the day, you could sample and release stuff without getting clearance. Nowadays, that's not so much of a easy thing to do. So I, if you are not familiar with it, please give it a listen. There are some great songs in there, and I would definitely recommend their catalog, which is an allusion to a possible deep dive as we go forward into this podcast. So, all right, Tim, we're now to number one. What is your number one?
My number one, big drum roll. This album was released in August of 76. And is probably the band's most well-known piece of work. Because the band really didn't last a whole lot with the current lineup. And that's Boston from Boston. This album to me means more than the other two. I mean, I just love every second. Like I said before, I love every second of every other album. But when I first started to think of ideas for this topic, this album was the first one I thought of right away. It's just a fantastic sounding record, not just musically, but it's mixed very well. It's engineered very well. The lyrics to all the songs are written so well. I mean, it's just, this album could be a greatest hits. I mean, before I actually realized what the album was. I've heard every single one of these songs on radio before. It opens up with a song that most people would probably pick up from Guitar Hero, More Than a Feeling, and into Peace of Mind, and then arguably one of the one of the more fun songs to play as a guitarist, Foreplay Long Time. And then side two was Rock and Roll Band, Smoke and Hitchin' a Ride, Something About You, Let Me Take You Home Tonight. All of these songs are so fantastic and so well put together and just so very well written by Tom Scholz and Brad Delp. And it's just a fantastic album from start to finish. And this is one that should be on everybody's list. Or if it's not on your list, you probably already know all of these songs.
Yeah, I mean, it is a long player from front to back. It's short. I mean, I'm surprised. It's less than 40 minutes, but it tells a story, and it is. I mean, Tom's voice. It is the way he hits some of those notes, and the composition of the album is just. It is something that you just throw on and just okay. I'm gonna be in their hands for the entire length of this album. It is a great album. It is one that you really can't, even in the late 70s, at that time where they were making that transition out of the arena rock into punk, into all the other album, you know, all the other genres that were coming after it. It still is it's one of those ones that's a touch point for a lot of people, and it is it's hard to explain to people that weren't there at the time. Cause I think at this time when it came out, I was 7 years old, and you heard it everywhere. It was not something that you would, Boston was just, in the visuals, as far as the album cover in invoking the whole, the whole space, not paranoia, but still a lot of that stuff. It was something that people were gravitating towards. I mean, you had Kiss. It was definitely more of the flashier end of what the 70s were turning out to be.
More glam arena rock than
We
know as classic rock. But I mean, just the way the album opens up, and I'm going to get a little technical, so I might bore some people, but with More Than a Feeling fading into your ears with Brad Delp playing an arpeggiated D chord on a 12 string. To me, there's no other perfect way to open up an album. I mean, some bands like to do it with, you know, a crazy riff, a couple hard bar chords, which is fine, and that's great. But to me, there's no other album opening track on this planet. And it's just a fantastic album to listen to play along to if you are a guitarist, or even to play some of these songs. I've covered a few of them with different bands over my time, and it's just a fantastic, fantastic piece of work.
Yeah. I mean, and again, they're getting out in 8 songs. Compared to some of the other albums that take, you know, 20 songs to do, what they did in a total time of, you know, almost 37 minutes.
If I remember the story correctly, they did a lot of the recording on their own in Tom Scholz's house.
Yeah.
Because not only couldn't they get studio time, if I remember the story correctly, and I'm sorry if I'm not remembering every detail, but they were also turned down a lot. And at one point, Brad Delp was like, I'm done with this. So once all the recording was done, Brad Delp did leave for a little bit. But once Tom Scholz was able to get everything, because he did a lot of the engineering and producing himself on this album. And once he was able to get that done and get it into the hands of a recording group, that liked the album, it was off to the races with it. And this album I've seen so much stuff on, from Rolling Stone's top 500 albums. I think Billboard did an article a couple years ago putting it on the top 100 albums you need to listen to before you die kind of lists. Or, sorry, 1,001 albums you must hear before you die. It's just... It was also ranked number 43 on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's Definitive 200 list. So this album has a huge legacy and a huge following, and it's just an amazing piece of work from beginning to end.
Yeah. There's no arguing. This thing is just, it's just slaps, as you would say. The younger generation would say. So
well, that's a younger than me, but we got to keep it current a little bit.
That's exactly it. So, all right. So we'll go to my number one, which happened a few days after the debut of Boston's debut album, but a couple of years later, August 27, 1991, Pearl Jam's 10. I attribute everything to Nirvana and how they did, you know, how Nevermind came about, Pearl Jam still is the torchbearer for classic rock going forward. Nirvana was definitely more punk influenced. Pearl Jam was influenced by a lot more than just punk. I could go through all the plaudits that they had. They had Alive, Even Flow, Jeremy. Those were, I think during that time from 91 to 92, they were the gorilla that just sat there and everyone had to pay attention to them. They were, you could not talk about any music without mentioning Pearl Jam. You still can't. According to me, again, I'm probably not unbiased in that regard. I did not know that. I mean, I knew eventually that they named after Mookie Blaylock, which was a basketball player that I actually saw play college basketball in the University of Oklahoma. So that strengthens my ties with them. But they are just a powerhouse band, and this album, it is a no skipper. If you've never heard it, you really should rectify that situation. They are in right now as part of the National Association of Recording Merchandisers. They are in the definitive 200 of all time, actually number 11. You're looking at the greatest debut of Rolling Stones Reader's Poll. They are number one in 2013. The album, you could go front to back. They've released it a number of times with different, you know, mixes on it. I can't say that which mix is better. I like both. So it just depends on what, if you like the older version, which has a little bit more of I think they would call it more of the 80s feedback on it, as far as more of the drum sound was had a little bit more range to it, not range to it, but echoing to it that they used to put on there. I like both. I can't say which one on there, and I would hate to say that I would know what the drummer is. There's two drummers actually on the album, Dave Crossan and Dave Abuneze, I think is the name. I'm not sure. I mean, nowadays it's Matt Cameron, who came from Soundgarden. But still, it is, you can't, I mean, the whole, I listen to the album at least once every 6 months, if not more. They're a very vital band, very important band going forward. And I really think you can't go any worse than, I mean, just to have this type of debut, even more than Nirvana, which, again, I was there for Nirvana's debut. They were awesome, but I think the staying power of Pearl Jam and how they've gone forward, through the ashes of grunge into this form of classic rock is remarkable, because they could have burned and done the same exact thing, burned and broke up, similar to Nirvana. But it is, 10 is really, really should be the top debuts of all time.
Well, I'm glad I changed, because I this was going to be where I put Weezer. I agreed with everything you said. If we were doing top four, this would have been there. This album is just fantastically done from front to back. And I use that phrase a lot during these albums, but it's true. And this album has just stood the test of time. I remember in 21, when it turned 30, I went out and bought it on vinyl. And it's one I still play regularly. I mean, everything is such an influential album for a lot of people, myself included. And just some of the track listings on it are some songs that I remember hearing on the radio and thinking, I want to play music like that. Specifically, Once, Even Flow, Jeremy, Black. Side note, Black is a go-to karaoke song for me.
What's funny, Black was never released as a single. A lot of the stuff outside of the top three, which was Once, Even Flow, and Alive, and maybe Jeremy, none of those were really considered play. You know, they weren't top playing, but they were still on the you would hear them on alternative radio. And nowadays, I mean, it used to be a thing with all the fans when they would go see him. Hey, did you get to see Porch Live? Did you get to see Garden Live? All the deep cuts off of 10, they would never play. They would play them, but mostly they would stick with the hits as far as 10 goes. So the fact that they had so many deep cuts that were wanted by the fans, they wouldn't get to play because the catalog is so deep. And reference to a future podcast, how deep their catalog is. As someone who's seen them multiple times live, they are, they are just unbelievable as far as a band goes, and how tight they are and how good musicianships they are. And I think that speaks to a lot of this album, is that they all went through, I'm assuming everyone knows what happened, how Pearl Jam came to be as far as the death of Andy Wood, and how they came together afterwards, Mother Love Bone, into what I would say it was Mookie Blaylock, which of course, because Mookie didn't want them, his name to be part of the music band, they changed their name to Pearl Jam, and that's when this album was released. I can't speak highly of this album, and I know people really look at this album with some regard, but really I think that's even being sliding them. I think this album can't be beat as far as a debut album for what it is and what it gives, brings to the table as far as just the emotion as well as the musicianship that's involved with this album.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
All right. Well, I mean, that's it. That's our top three. If people have any dissenters or feel like that we did not hit the proper debuts or we missed one, please let us know. I think we have an email is talkingtunespod@gmail.com. Please hit us up and make sure we will probably address any type of reader's comment. So with that, we will end for today's show. I'm Britt.
I'm Tim.
All right. Hope you have a great day.
Rock on.
Rock on.